Welcome to the Readings Podcast, a production from Melbourne's leading independent bookstore, Readings. In today's episode, another installment of The Comics Question, a series where Bernard Cowley and I discuss comics, graphic novels, and all manner of illustrated books, scenes, and other associated productions. In this episode, Bernard Cowley was joined by Readings bookseller Nick Curnow to give a roundup of some of the most intriguing, beautiful, and thought-provoking comics and graphic novels from 2023. This is part two of two, so do check out the first installment of this particular conversation. Here's Bernard to introduce.
Welcome back to the Readings Podcast and to the second installment of my, Bernard Cowley, and Nick Curnow.
Hello.
Discussion of notable graphic novels published in 2023. I'll talk about one, Nick will talk about one. We'll go back and forth. Recording this, of course, on the land of the Wurundjeri people, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and future.
So, I would like to talk about a new book from one of the most exciting comics presses out right now. It is The Gulyetin by Joe Kessler from the New York Review of Comics. Now, the New York Review of Comics has been around since about 2016. They only put out maybe like four or five books a year, but all of the books are completely different. I had a very hard time choosing, I only limited myself to two. I could have chosen all five just because there's such variety and difference between what they put out. One of the authors that I'm going to be talking about is French. But they do a variety of international, things that haven't been translated previously that are important, books that have been out of print for decades, they'll put back in print. An exciting one that we're not going to be discussing today is Bungleton Green and the Mystic Commandos by Joe Jordan, which was a comic strip that ran in the 40s in an African-American newspaper, the Chicago Defender, which is absolutely fantastic, but we don't have the time to discuss that. And instead, we're talking about The Gulyetin. Now, Joe Kessler, who's the author of Gulyetin, he's the co-founder and one of the art directors of Britain's most exciting press, Breakdown Press, which mostly publishes manga in translation as well. But The Gulyetin is not manga. It is a completely wordless story following a young boy who loses his parents in a house fire. And then in the hospital, he is possibly kidnapped by a shape-shifting seagull and tries to escape him, and he finds himself at this woman's house and the gull becomes jealous. It's this very fairy tale story, but because it's a wordless story, there isn't much in the way of the typical narrativity that you sort of see in a comic where there's the word balloons or the little boxes of exposition that sort of help pull you along in the story, and instead it purely relies on the drawing. And the drawing and the art itself is incredible. It uses a very limited colour scheme of red, yellow, white, black, and green.
How do you think he's making the marks?
There's so many ways that he's making the marks. And so he uses collage, watercolour. He uses marker pens. Sometimes the drawings look like architectural drawings. They're just so clean. But mostly he draws off-model. And when we mean off-model, usually what that means is the drawings vary from panel to panel. There isn't a consistency.
Off-model, I've never heard that term before, but it certainly chimes with the sort of art comic approach you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. And it sort of works very well in the book's favour, especially considering that one of the characters is a shapeshifter. And so that sort of the fluctuating form of that character as well, really works with the looseness of the drawing. There's an obviousness to the materials that he's using. You can tell when he's using a marker pen that it's a marker pen. When you carry a marker pen across the page, there's the way that the brush catches or doesn't spill enough ink, and or the way that the watercolour bleeds into certain papers. He really relies on those sort of the physical making of the book to sort of sell the style altogether.
Does it feel fast in terms of its execution?
Sometimes it does. I think with a silent comic especially, the issues of pacing, how quickly the book is read, I think can also be told through the drawings. There are some times where the drawings feel very slow, but those sections are slow parts of the book, and you feel that's when you take a breath and you sort of luxuriate in the surroundings. And then there are moments where the drawing is so immediate, there's such sprezzatura to them, that oh, this is moving quickly. It's all happening now. Mm. And there's such like momentum that builds through the drawing. And I think it just speaks to like Joe Kessler as a craftsman, how to sustain a narrative for 150, 200 pages completely silently. It's a feat. It is just absolutely incredible.
Right. Right. And you get to the end of this book and do you go, you know, is your heart sort of emptied because of the fate of... I don't want to tell us what happens.
No, no. Well, I will say, like all fairy tales, there is a happy end.
So that is The Gull Yetin, Y-E-T-T-I-N, by Joe Kessler, published by, did you say the most exciting publisher in America?
Or at least my favourite. Yeah, definitely one of the most exciting publishers.
And that publisher is?
The New York Review of Comics.
New York Review of Comics. All right. Thank you, Nick.
The other book that I wanted to talk about from the New York Review of Comics is Social Fiction by Chantal Montellier, who is a French comics artist. This is the only the second of her books to be translated into English, which is a darn shame because she is one of the great comics artists and has been working for quite some time. These comics originally came out in the 1970s.
In the 70s?
In the 70s.
So this is the in the French bande dessinée tradition, one of the great traditions of comics making, the French language, the Japanese language, and the American language.
And the American language, absolutely. And these originally came out in Metal Hurlant.
Oh.
Yeah.
Screaming Metal.
Screaming Metal, soon to come out in the American language as Heavy Metal.
As Heavy Metal.
Where originally some of these came out, but were very poorly translated. And basically, they were just never collected into English until now.
And she actually comments, complains in the interview where really her vision of the stories that she's telling, which are sort of dystopian visions, were sort of trivialised by the translation.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah. It was sort of like turned into sort of generic genre stories rather than what they actually are, which is a collection of three female-oriented dystopias. And what I mean by female-oriented is like the main characters are young women who are sort of caught in the mechanisms of dystopia.
Yes.
Very, very hopeful stuff.
The creator is sort of coming out of that May 68.
Oh, absolutely. May 68 was a political uprising in France that was led by students, and it was generally seen as like being like a great moment of like hope and change.
Yes.
And it didn't. So there was a lot of a hangover period sort of ensued. And I feel like this book really captures that sort of the hangover from the hope of May 68. There's a certain like, cynicism about like the way that the social institutions, which are supposed to like protect us and help us, actually end up working in ways that are violent at best, genocidal at worst.
Yes.
And the stories really revolve around the state mechanisms, like reduce the female body into basically just sort of inert matter.
Yeah.
Or at least attempt to.
Yes. These stories are analyses of power, really, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
They're very narrative. They're very fictional. But it's clear about dark vision of what happens to people's bodies under oppressive state.
Yeah. People's bodies, people's like hopes.
Yes.
The ideals that sort of come from that.
Yeah.
So the first story is Wonder City, and it deals with like a young couple who are in love and they want to have a child, but the society regulates who gets to have children. And in fact, most children are born in like vats. Mm. And so that's sort of the central tension that comes up, but there's sort of a darker secret that sort of society holds. The second story, Shelter, is my favorite one in the collection. It's also the darkest one. And it follows another couple who go to a shopping mall. And a nuclear attack happens and they are trapped in the nuclear bunker of the shopping mall with 800 other people and they have to recreate society from scratch. But the problem is that the managers of the shopping mall are now in charge of society. And it sort of deals with the friction that happens when people are like rent from trying to recreate like the normal capitalist everyday system and the exploitation and the viciousness that sort of ends up coming out of like the continuation of that system.
That sounds like social friction.
That's social friction in your social fiction. And then the last one is the then future year of 1996. I know, Days of Future Past. And it's a series of, they're almost like gag strips, they're like page long comics that sort of deal with the relationship of labor and power and society. Again, it's that sort of 68 hangover thing and just sort of dealing with, like, people losing their work. They lose their jobs and they just get gassed at the end of it.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, just, like, really positive things.
Sure, sure. And what's her... Is she... her drawing style? Can you talk to that? Is it
Her drawing style is quite similar to Jack Tardy's. Jack Tardy is known for his comics about, like, the First World War and also his sort of strange humorous comics as well. But she has, how to describe it, it's very French in terms of the actual drawing itself. There's, like, such a beautiful focus on the cleanliness of the line. There's a division between, like, the hard blacks and whites. There isn't much in the way of, like, cross-hatching or shading in that sense. But I think that's what makes it so French, is that clear line. Mm. Like, what is it?
Ligne claire.
Yeah. Yes.
Instituted by Hergé in Tintin.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just stayed on. Mm-hmm. And the cleanliness of the drawing. Mm. It's almost architectural in, like, the way that it's laid out. But it works so well because even though sometimes it feels like it could be almost static, and sometimes the stories are static, but it works in that favour. But it's so fluid, her line as well, that it sort of has a bit of bounce and weight to it. It gives the stories a bit of life.
So it's, again, the New York Review of Comics is the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Social Fiction.
Social Fiction by Chantal Montellier.
Chantal Montellier. Well, excellent. I'm going to talk now about another graphic novel, but by an American creator who's quite well known for his comic strip, Zippy the Pinhead.
Yay!
Hey, yay! Bill Griffith has been producing Zippy the Pinhead since the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the original underground comics crew with Robert Crumb and Art Spiegelman and Aileen Kaminsky Crumb.
Yeah. Diane Newman?
Diane Newman, who in fact Bill Griffith was married to. But this book is a long narrative called Three Rocks, the story of Ernie Bushmiller, the man who created Nancy. And in fact, through no planning, I assure you folks, we're back at newspaper strips here because Nancy is a newspaper strip from the Golden Age, or maybe a little bit after the Golden Age, sort of 40s through to 70s.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit afterwards. Yes. Yeah.
But Ernie Bushmiller, it's a comic strip biography of Ernie Bushmiller, and Bill Griffith is telling this story because he loves Nancy, the comic strip Nancy, which is a little girl who, with her friend Sluggo, just gets into all sorts of japes, but has a very much a, there's a absurdism that lurks, a surrealism even, that lurks behind the facade of Nancy. And Three Rocks, the name of this comic, refers to, indeed, the three rocks that in Bushmiller's strip Nancy sort of denotes, here we are on the street with Nancy. I think Griffith is talking here about the shorthand, the extreme shorthand, the haiku shorthand that a long-running comic strip can and often does evolve. This is a work of, not of hagiography, like he's not making this guy into a saint, Ernie Bushmiller, but he is giving a fairly granular account of the career of a cartoonist. Ernie Bushmiller starts as a running boy in the great newspaper offices, befriends the cartoonists, and then he starts doing the rubbing out, and then he starts filling in the blacks. And, you know, it looks at that apprentice system of becoming a cartoonist. And so in that sense, it is a, I would say it is a work of nostalgia or a vanished period of cartooning. But if you're obsessed with comics, it's pretty good. But also, it also does give a picture of wider American life, social life, I suppose, in that period, basically the 40s to the 70s. I really enjoyed this book. And Griffith doesn't just give us a biography, but also certainly does give us a sense of that lurking surrealism in Nancy. And again, edges into this idea of what the hell it is that comics give us.
Mm.
What the hell it is that these repetitive images might burn into our minds, possibly like negatives in here. So there's some of that in there. It's not heavy in the text, but certainly that's for me, the protein in this book.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating because Nancy is such a, it's like the platonic ideal of like a gag strip.
Yes.
Like, it is so condensed, stripped down to its essentials, just, like, the purest format of, like, what you need to, like, make Nancy tell a joke.
Yes.
The drawing in them is absolutely incredible because, like, they're almost, like, mechanical.
Yes.
Like, it's machine-made, but it's, like, a person, like, making it.
Maybe Chantal Montellier should do a strip about Ernie Bushmiller.
Yes, Chantal Montellier's Ernie Bushmiller. Everybody should do an Ernie Bushmiller.
Okay, over to you.
Yes, and so the last one that I wanted to talk about is a little bit of a departure. Well, I think it definitely fits in with Three Rocks.
Okay.
I'd say, like, Three Rocks is almost like a work of criticism in its own way.
I would say so.
So what we are talking about is not a comic per se here, but a zine. And it's a work of comics criticism by the Canadian writer and artist Robin Bougie. He of Cinema Sewer and Sleazy Slice fame.
What are these fames? Are these zines about cinema? And zines
Well, Cinema Sewer was about cinema. Yep. And so it would be sort of like every page is like, he writes the darn thing.
Wow. And what is it, the darn thing, about?
The Gutter Hunter.
Yes.
Is about gutter hunting and the joy of comics.
Okay, so the gutter, folks, is that space, the white space in between one panel and the next.
Oh, yeah. Gutter hunting, or at least Bougie's definition of gutter hunting, is like looking through the bins of, like, old comic book stores and just finding, you know, those little gems that you sometimes dig up. And it's just about the pleasure of comics, the joy of making comics, the joy of reading comics, and all the different kinds of comics out there that he likes.
So it's more, I saw some pictures in there. Is that Bougie quoting from the books he's found, or is he drawing them? Or?
Sometimes it would be him quoting from the books, and then other times it's taken from the books themselves.
Okay.
And then other times he's collaborating with other artists. There's two comic strips in here. One is by Noah Van Sciver, and the other one is a collaboration with Mark Bell.
Big names in the art comics.
Absolutely. Huge names.
Pantheon.
Yes. Yeah. So it's very much like one guy sort of like writing about the things that he loves and the things that he hates.
Does it read like ranting, or does it...
He's got a couple of rants in there. Okay. You need your rants.
Absolutely.
Like, you need to have your, like, angry letters pages. You've got to have a little bit of fun with it. I've been following Robin for ages. I love his comics and his work in general. It weirdly has been a big influence on sort of some aspects of my taste. The thoughts that are going on in his head, what's happening in his life, what he's up to.
Isn't this sort of thing the thing that the internet was designed to replace?
This was the thing that the internet was designed to replace and has done a very poor job of doing it. Thanks, Elon. And one of the fascinating parts of, like, the zine and, like, what Robin talks about is, like, the difficulty of making comics. There's a very long article where he and a variety of other cartoonists that he's asked to contribute talk about, like, the hashtag that's been trending, Why Comics Broke Me, which deals with the nitty-gritty reality of making comics and the comics industry at large, and just sort of how grinding and miserable it can be. How grinding and miserable this thing that they all love and we all love.
And, like, and its name is comics? Like, comic? As in funny?
Yeah, funny haha. You've got to have your pain behind the laughs. Like,
right, so there's an extended section of this book which is about that question of how difficult it is.
Yeah, it's about the reality of making comics.
On the board, or like, where do you get your money from, or getting published, or
all over? Again, like, he draws from a variety of, like, different people. So there are some who do web comics, some who work for, like, big publishers, some who do, like, their own work and self-publish and distribute themselves, which is what Robin himself does.
So this book here, Gutter Hunter, is a self-published...
It is a self-published comic. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Printed in Canada, and then, yeah, I think he does, like, maybe 1,000 copies.
Okay.
And then just sells them.
Yeah.
Previously did Cinema Sewer, which ran for 23 years and wrapped up about 2-3 years ago.
And he'd do a Cinema Sewer every year?
Would do a Cinema Sewer every year or every 6 months.
Wow.
Gutter Hunter at the moment comes out once a year.
Yep.
It's about 100 pages, and so it's just, like, it's a lot of work to put in.
As he himself will tell you.
And he also had a short run comics that he, like, helped edit and distribute called Sleazy Slice, which was, like, international, just choice of the weirdest and wildest comics. Jason Carnes was, like, a reoccurring person. Josh Simmons. My first exposure to Josh Simmons was Sleazy Slice Volume 3, and it is permanently seared on my brain. So I deeply love his work.
Yes.
And every time there's something else that he puts out. And there's a few people out there. I think that's a big thing with comics as well. We've been talking a lot about, you know, Fantagraphics and Pantheon, Glom Press, which is a local press. There's all these different levels of the comics industry. And I feel like Robin here is one of the very seeds of it, which is the self-published comic.
Very much. And as you say, that's an incredibly important part of the schooling oneself in the art of making these things. Oh, how does a book work? Well, how did the pagination, you know, like that school, that process of putting that book together, you know, it is part of that. Yeah, there is no comic book school, not in Australia anyway.
No,
and
not yet.
Not yet. Soon. How do you learn how to make comics? You make them.
You do it.
Yeah, and so the zine level of that bottom level, the starting level, is definitely the strongest school there is.
About. The strongest and richest school.
Oh, nice. Nice combo. I'm very pleased with this discussion, this two-part discussion, Nick Kernow, because we've covered artists making books, but we also wanted to talk about publishers, talk about criticism, comics criticism as well. And we've got that with, can you tell us the name and of the maker? And
it is Gutter Hunter Issue 3 by Robin Bougie, and self-published.
Self-published. So you need to look, contact Robin direct.
Contact Robin direct. I think he's got a big cartel where you can pick up his work from. Cinemasura is published by Fab Press in the UK, and I think you can get those from your usual book suppliers.
Book suppliers. Oh, that's very official.
Hint, hint.
Well, that's us then signing off. Nick, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you. This has been a real delight.
Real pleasure. And hopefully we'll talk again possibly about Daniel Clowes's book that came out last year, Monica.
So I hope so. I think we've got a lot to say about that one.
Lot to talk about. All right. See you in the funny papers.
Ciao, ciao.
Excluding the self-published title, all of the books that Bernard and Nick discussed in this episode are available via all reading stores, as well as our website, where you'll find all kinds of other recommendations for great books, music, film, and TV. You can also sign up to eNews, or to receive our free monthly newsletter, The Readings Monthly. The Readings podcast is produced by me, Nick O'Callaghan. The show's music is by Tom Hoskins. This episode was recorded by Nelson Matthews. Thank you for listening.